This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 21st, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 213. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. The Is It Just Me commentary. And the big deal feature. Devastating rain, floods, landslides, and winds in the middle of November. Death and destruction. More economic turmoil. Why was British Columbia's NDP government so slow to react? Why didn't it warn the public? Here are highlights of the week that was. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or does the BC NDP government need to do a better job of communicating to British Columbians? They did nothing before the heat dome at the end of June, and as many as 600 people died in the worst June heat wave in BC since 1925. The BC NDP government also did nothing to warn British Columbians of the post-Remembrance Day Pineapple Express storm. Officials in Washington state, they were already on top of it at the start of the weekend, but BC was too little too late. The cleanup could cost billions of dollars, maybe the biggest natural disaster in Canadian history. At least four people dead so far. BC's Public Safety Minister Mike Farnworth tried to cover his butt by using words like unprecedented, and he blamed it all on climate change.
This was a rain event, a weather event of unprecedented proportions.
The hyperbole borders on disinformation. Of course, he never saw it before. He was born after May 1948, when spring floods devastated Abbotsford. And he was born after the November 1955 storms that devastated southern BC. A government compilation of media reports from November 1st to 4th of 1955 described rain on snow and storm surge and tidal flooding. They called it the worst rainstorm ever to hit the West Coast. Over 3 days, North Vancouver recorded 1.5 feet of rain. Highways Minister Phil Gillardy declared the North Shore an emergency flood area, and the Army was called out. British Columbians are taught very little of their weather history. Media coverage from 1948 and 1955 is hard to find on Google. TV was young, and newspapers and radio were dominant. Today, everyone can instantly publish what they see with a smartphone and access to social media. We also have more expertise and better technology to forecast the weather. So many meteorologists saw what was coming last weekend, but government didn't do anything with that information. Heat waves in June and torrential rains in November, they've happened before, they'll happen again. The question for government is, will it find a way to do a better job of preparing and guarding its citizens and infrastructure from the inevitable? What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The warnings were stark. 2 days after Remembrance Day, an atmospheric river would dump heavy rain nonstop for 2 days on southern British Columbia and northern Washington state. The latest in a parade of fall storms since September after late June's devastating heat dome that started wildfire season. The global BC 6 p.m. newscast from November 12th included this ominous weekend forecast.
Here's meteorologist Yvonne Shell with more on this atmospheric river. And at Yvonne, we heard today that in a preemptive move, Vancouver closed all the outdoor athletic parks this weekend.
And I can see why, because this will be a juicy one. We've actually got a bit of a brief break that'll take us in towards the morning hours. But in behind it, it's this plume of moisture that'll be coming from the tropics. We'll have warm air, but a significant amount of rain and snow for the mountain passes that'll be changing over to rain. Now, the rainfall advisory extending in towards the Sunshine Coast, Howe Sound, Metro Vancouver, and the Fraser Valley. The heaviest rainfall will beginning for Saturday night, continuing Sunday, and then easing off by Monday. But we're looking at rainfall amounts anywhere between 75 and potentially up to 150 millimeters. Big concern with this atmospheric river will be high stream levels and local flooding, rapid warming and excessive melt, especially for the mountains with that freezing level rising.
The weather experts called it, but top BC government officials were very slow to react. On the record-breaking November 14th, Hope got almost 175 millimeters of rain. Chilliwack got more than 150 millimeters. There were mudslides, power outages, floods. The wind came on November 15th. The Coast Guard was called to deal with some two dozen vessels between Vancouver and Victoria. A barge went adrift in the windstorm, eventually slamming into the rocks near Sunset Beach in Vancouver. These are some of the sounds from Coast Guard radio.
Sunset Beach. I have two sailing vessels, each with a single person on board, just outside of the Maritime Museum, drifting while at anchor slightly towards Sunset Beach. And I've got a sailing boat with my crew member on board, and a power boat pushed up against the seawall of David Lamb Park. How copy?
Road and rail routes between the Lower Mainland and Interior were closed. Bridges along the Coquihalla Highway had collapsed. The cost to rebuild may be in the billions of dollars. The Trans Mountain Pipeline was shut down. By the end of the week, the government announced gas rationing. Much attention was focused on Abbotsford, beginning November 15th.
I'm Henry Braun. I'm the mayor of the city of Abbotsford, and today I declared a state of local emergency for the city of Abbotsford following the extreme rainfall that has resulted in several localized emergencies within our city. Various small mudslides and localized flooding have occurred in many areas within the city, and as some of you may know, the city of Abbotsford is the largest geographical city in the province, so we have a lot of ground to cover. Evacuation orders and alerts have been issued for a number of areas, ensuring that the safety of Abbotsford residents and infrastructure, which is our number one priority.
In Ottawa, Mission Matsqui Fraser Canyon Conservative MP Brad Viss pleaded with reporters from the press gallery to pay attention to his home.
Do you support Erin O'Toole's decision to remove Senator Batters?
You know what? The most important question needs to be, why aren't you asking me about Mission Matsqui Fraser Canyon and the devastating flooding that's taking place in Chilliwack Hope, Abbotsford, in the Okanagan and Dan's Riding? I want to thank Minister Blair for meeting with us this morning to discuss the dire situation on the ground. Our constituents, 7,000 people were evacuated in Dan's Riding. All of the major roadways in British Columbia are destroyed. We don't have rail infrastructure right now. Our country is facing an unprecedented situation in the province of BC. And all hands need to be on deck to support the rebuild in British Columbia to keep people safe. I'm thankful that the military has been called in and the appropriate steps are being taken, and that the minister's been, that he's on the situation, because this is not a partisan thing, this is a Team Canada thing. We need all hands on deck to keep people safe. We're going to face major food security issues in the immediate term that also need to be addressed. So the work is just beginning. Keep people safe. Get our province built back, because it's bad right now.
Do you think Batters should have been kicked out of caucus?
Right now, my only focus is on supporting the people of Mission Matsqui Fraser Canyon in British Columbia. There's no time for partisan politics. Right now, there's only time to support British Columbia and get people safe. That should be your only question right now. Keeping British Columbia safe. The people need our help. They don't want to hear about a senator. They want to hear about what we're doing here today to help our province and to help our country. Effectively, the Port of Metro Vancouver, are you guys aware of this? The Port of Metro Vancouver is cut off from the rest of the country. We're talking billions of dollars of economic loss right now. We haven't had anything like this ever happen before. We, in British Columbia, we've heard for many years that we're gonna have a big earthquake one day and the Lower Mainland could be cut off from the rest of the province. Well, that just happened. And then you throw in what happened in June in my riding in Lytton. Do you guys remember what happened there? Lytton burned to the ground. Now Lytton's been cut off even more because the roadways to Kamloops through mudslides have been destroyed. The Duffy Lake Road on 99, there was someone that died there. The military is doing ongoing searches to see if people are alive because they've been stranded in their cars. I have the military out in Harrison Mills, in Hope, in Agassiz, have to evacuate hundreds of people stranded in their cars between two landslides. Thousands of people were at risk of losing their lives. I have family members right now on Sumas Prairie whose livelihoods are at stake, who've had to be evacuated because the Sumas Lake, which existed 100 years ago, if you don't know the history, could be coming back because our pump system could be failing.
Do you attribute this to climate change?
Happening again?
Well, right now, we need to focus on the safety of British Columbia.
In the BC legislature, Green Party leader Sonia Furstenow.
We've had a lot of opportunities this year to test how prepared we are for these emergencies. We've had a heat dome, a record-setting wildfire season, a bomb cyclone, a localized tornado, and now severe flooding and infrastructure collapse across the province because of record-setting rainfall. The Alberta government told people to stay home on the weekend in response to this incoming weather system. On Friday, Washington State issued flood warnings and distributed free sandbags in counties forecasted to be heavily impacted. They were proactive and they minimized loss. And yes, I acknowledge absolutely the incredible work of EMBC, of search and rescue, of road crews. And yes, this absolutely is climate change.
Also in the BC legislature, Abbotsford BC Liberal MLA Bruce Banman.
This is a tragedy on an unparalleled scale. Dire weather forecasts were clear on Friday. On the U.S. side of the border, a flood warning was issued for the Nooksack River on Sunday at 3:40 p.m. On Monday, Governor Jay Inslee issued a severe weather emergency proclamation and implemented emergency procedures. The U.S. flood sirens in Sumas, Washington, could be heard in Abbotsford. This area is home to a huge population of livestock, poultry, farmers that provide, as we've heard, on the low end, 50% of the food for British Columbia. And despite being reminded of the risk on Monday, zero steps were taken to initiate an evacuation plan that could have saved thousands and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of animals.
Banman, a former mayor of Abbotsford, said Abbotsford had not seen such, quote, destruction, loss, and heartache, end quote, since the Sumas flood of May 1948. The CBC archives on YouTube include this report that vividly describes the 1948 disaster.
The Fraser has hurtled out of the mountain passes and overflowed its banks to cover thousands of acres of rich land in one of the most beautiful valleys in the world with the muddy waters of disaster. A new and terrible kind of desert suddenly appears, a desert of water. Only the trees and the tops of barns and houses still hold their heads above the flood. From the black Wednesday that the Agassiz dikes broke, the tragic story moved with breathtaking speed toward its terrible climax. Community after community wavered and fell before the onslaught of the river. Every 24 hours brought fresh reports of disaster. Crops disappeared under the muddy waters. Valuable equipment and homes built by years of effort were swallowed up in the ever-widening Fraser. The last week of May 1948 will be remembered by the people of the Fraser Valley as a week of brutal tragedy. For miles, there were no longer the neat fields and fences, the pleasant farms and pastures and country roads, but only a waste of dirty water dotted with the rooftops of barns and houses. Whole communities were isolated and others engulfed by water. And all the time, the Fraser moved on relentlessly, rising each day as the melting snows poured their enormous weight into its headwaters. By now, the flood was recognized as a major disaster and began its long sojourn on the front pages of the newspapers. And by now, too, the full facilities of the Canadian Red Cross had swung into the battle. With the willing assistance of transportation companies and private individuals, the mass evacuations of flooded areas began. In some cases, evacuation by normal means was impossible, and the Army Duck went back on active service, this time on a mission of mercy. One of the farmers' greatest worries was for the safety of their livestock. Valuable sheep, in many cases, had to be taken to safe ground in rowboats. Each sheep had to be carried to shore, where they waited trussed up and panting in animal terror. Cows are one of the most important assets in the Fraser Valley. Many of them, marooned on high ground, were badly in need of milking. Every truck that could be pressed into service was utilized in an effort to rescue these animals. On Friday, May the 28th, the provincial government authorized the use of troops to aid in evacuation. Sailors became familiar and welcome sights to valley residents cut off by the floodwaters. Many communities found their streets turned into rivers and their houses into islands. Gone were the gardens hidden behind picket fences. Now, only the picket fences peered mournfully over the scene of desolation.
NDP Public Safety Minister Mike Farnworth was on the defensive for BC's slow response to the forecast and the unfolding disaster.
That's how these decisions need to be made, by the experts on the ground. Not by experts on Twitter, but the experts on the ground dealing with that local situation, understanding the local conditions. And I can tell you, as Solicitor General, I will always take their experience, their expertise, that local knowledge, when it comes when and how to deploy an alert, and when and how to deploy resources.
Finally, on November 18th, Premier John Horgan called a state of emergency for BC, 3 days after Washington state officials did.
The last few days have been incredibly difficult for British Columbians as we've experienced yet another natural disaster. Heavy rains, strong winds, flooding have devastated entire communities of our province. Thousands of people have been forced from their homes under evacuation orders, and many others were left stranded between road closures and mudslides. Yesterday, the RCMP confirmed the mudslides have claimed at least one life. That's devastating news for a family. It's devastating news for all British Columbians. But sadly, we expect to confirm even more fatalities in the coming days. Yesterday, I spoke to Prime Minister Trudeau. He offered to provide assistance where needed to help us respond to the immediate disaster, as well as working with communities to rebuild going forward. The province has now formally requested that deployment of federal resources, including the armed forces, to assist with evacuations, managing of supply chains and resupply chains, security in inundated areas, as well as restoration of safe drinking water and other logistics assistance. I'd also want to thank the governments of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Ontario, who were immediate in their offer of assistance to help in any way they can.
The human, agricultural, environmental, and economic costs are not yet known, but they will be huge. The Breaker.News will continue to follow this story, as it will take months, if not years, for southern BC to recover.
Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Mainichi news, Hiroshima and Nagasaki mayors meet PM Kishida, call for Japan to join anti-nuke conference. Countries that signed the treaty to prohibit nuclear weapons meet in March 2022. It was the first time for a sitting Japanese prime minister to have met the mayors of the two atomic bombed cities at the same time. Since then, Prime Minister Ryotaro Hashimoto did so in 1996. During their visit to the Prime Minister's office in Tokyo, the two mayors called on Kishida, who was elected from Hiroshima, to push for efforts to abolish nuclear weapons. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan poll finds 85% support status quo. China's recent announcement it was drawing up a list of stubborn Taiwan independence supporters, including Taiwan's premier and foreign minister, met with disapproval from 78%. The Mainland Affairs Council poll said 77% agreed the Chinese government was unfriendly toward the Taiwan government, while 58% also said it was unfriendly toward the people of Taiwan. Proposals to prevent more high-tech talent and technological information from moving to China won agreement from 71% of the survey respondents, though 73% agreed that Chinese visitors should be welcome again in Taiwan once the COVID-19 pandemic is over its peak. In the Manila Times, Chinese ships harass Philippine boats in Ayungan. Chinese Coast Guard vessels blocked and fired water cannons at two civilian boats resupplying Filipino troops stationed in the Ayungan Shoal, Philippine government officials reported. The Department of Foreign Affairs denounced the action of the Chinese ships as illegal, saying they were intruding in waters inside the Philippines' exclusive economic zone. About 19 Chinese Coast Guard ships have been detected at the shoal for almost a week, and 45 others were spotted in Pagasa Island. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland leaders agree to pour millions more into police, homeless services, and trash pickup. The Portland City Council unanimously approved a $44 million spending plan to bolster policing and public safety, assist those living on the streets, and clean up garbage and debris generated at campsites across the city. Mayor Ted Wheeler and city commissioners delivered the 5-0 decision amid mounting frustration over a deepening homelessness crisis, record shootings and homicides, and trash that continues to line commercial and residential blocks. In the Bellingham Herald, Governor Inslee promises help for Whatcom flood recovery and fight against climate change. Whatcom County officials expect damage in the range of $7 million to $10 million from the Pineapple Express storm that inundated communities across western Washington. Drenching rains lasted from November 13th to 15th, quickly melted 4 feet of snow that fell last week in the Mount Baker Wilderness, engorging all three forks of the Nooksack River and adding to record rainfall in the Whatcom County lowlands. Inslee spoke November 17th at the flooded Whatcom County Transportation Authority parking lot in Ferndale with a half dozen cars in water to their rocker panels behind him. In the FVCurrent.com, a drained lake, a rerouted river, and the rain, the deep roots of the Sumas flood crisis. Sumas Lake once covered much of the Fraser Valley's fertile farmland. This is the story of how it disappeared, how it could reappear, and some of the challenges ahead. The damages could exceed $500 million. Sumas Prairie is one of the most productive farming regions in the country, home to thousands of cattle and millions of chickens. Much of BC's milk, dairy, and poultry come from the prairie. The country's main highway runs through the valley, so do pipelines and key power lines. And more than 3,000 people, plus an unknown number of migrant farm workers, call it home. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the volunteer sandbaggers at Barrowtown in Abbotsford, the owners and staff of the Hope Pizza Place. These are just some of the many British Columbians who are coming together to do what they can in a time of need for their fellow British Columbians after the disaster on the middle weekend of November in the Fraser Valley and interior. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 21st, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 21st in 1950, two CN Rail trains collided near Canoe River in northeastern BC. 17 of the 21 dead were Canadian soldiers headed to Korea. Future Prime Minister John Diefenbaker defended telegraph operator Jack Atherton against manslaughter charges. The tragedy led to rail safety improvements. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.